The English education, whilst imparting knowledge, also introduced an alien philosophy, a Christian philosophy, to the students. In the process, there were conversions. There was either a direct conversion or an indirect conversion. On some occasions, the Westerners, the Englishmen, succeeded in directly converting a Buddhist or a Hindu. If he failed to succeed in the direct conversion, he succeeded in the indirect conversion. A Christian mind, a Christian body, and a Christian soul. We Muslims believe, and Siva will agree with me, I think the Hindu philosophy also shares the same view. We believe in a soul, in a body, and a mind. I am not sure whether Buddhism believe in a soul. Certainly Buddhism talks of, Lord Buddha has talked about a body and a mind. What the Englishman wanted was, through English education, he wanted to convert the soul. He wanted to convert the body. He wanted to convert the mind. When he failed in that, he succeeded in converting the mind. There was an empty shell. Those Muslims who were educated, who went to the universities, who held very high positions in society, they were Muslims. They were labeled as Muslims. They were praying, no doubt. They were fasting, no doubt. They were going to Hajj once a year, no doubt. But their minds had been brainwashed. Inside their mind, they were not Muslims. There was no Islam in their ruh. This was the biggest problem that was discovered by not only the Muslim forefathers in education, but also by the forefathers in education among the Hindus as well as Buddhists. They decried the Western education and English education, which brought together with it a Christian philosophy. Those Muslims who were educated under those circumstances became very apologetic about Islamic philosophy. They had a false pride. They developed a sense of inferior complex, a false pride in saying, well, we do not subscribe to the philosophy of Islam, and they were not defenders of the Islamic philosophy. As a result, the Muslim Ummah was becoming very lethargic. It is under those circumstances the Muslim community started talking about the Muslim education, which I today call it as a myth. But I'll come to that later. The net result was, look at 1902. The total number of educated people in 1902 in our community was only 119 people. The Muslim community in 1902 had only 119 educated people, which included, I believe, a solicitor general up to a cemetery keeper. The highest position held at that time was the position of a solicitor general. The lowest position was that of a cemetery keeper. Altogether, we had only 119 educated people. We had just a few handful of Muslim notaries. The first Muslim advocate passed out in 1905. We had no doctors. We had no chartered accountants. Today we are proud, alhamdulillah, mashallah, that we have among the Muslims educated people holding top positions. In this very audience, we have a Muslim who heads the Attorney General's Department. We have another Muslim who heads the Auditor General's Department. And we have another Muslim with us who heads the Department of Surgery in the College of Medicine. The first 29 years of the educational history of the Muslims, I should say, was non-eventful. They have nothing much. The Muslim education that we are talking about today, with which the term I do not agree, begins its vigor only after 29 years. It coincides with the appointment of late Marhum T.B. Jaya as the principal of Columbus Zahira College, 1921. Now, this is what late Jaya says about the Zahira College that he took over in 1921. The external appearance of the school was pathetic. There were 6 teachers and 59 students. Not a single furniture that could be described as good. The building was sufficient for a primary school, which was a haven of activities for the street urchins in the night. There was nothing attractive in its surrounding. There were shrub bushes and jungles within 20 or 30 yards of its vicinity. People considered the Zahira College that Jaya took over as a resort of the antisocial elements. This is the Zahira that we see in 1921. I am bringing Zahira because the educational history of the Muslims of Sri Lanka cannot be understood and assimilated unless one knows the history of Zahira, the history of the Zahira movement. Sir Ivor Jennings, who was the first Vice Chancellor of the University of Ceylon, in his report gives the following figures. In 1927, there were only 3 out of 315 students, 3 Muslims out of 315. In 1942, there was only 25 out of 904 students. In 1946, you have 37 out of 1,302. Between 1927 to 1947, the total increase of the student population had gone by 185%, whereas the total increase of the Muslim students went by 800%. This is something remarkable. The total increase among the normal, ordinary student population was only 185%, whereas the Muslim expansion increase was by 800%. And Sir Ivor Jennings attributes this outcome to the efforts over a period of 25 years by a single person and a single institution. That single person was none other than late T.B. Jaya, and that single institution is nothing other than Colombo Zahira College. Zahira's glorious story begins, I believe, with the appointment of T.B. Jaya in 1921. He was the principal of Zahira College till 1948, until he handed over the destiny of the education of the Muslims of this country in the hands of late A.M.A. Aziz, the father of Ali Aziz. So, Mr. Chairman, the 50 years that we are talking about is the last 3 years of T.B. Jaya and the most important years of A.M.A. Aziz at Zahira College. The education of the Muslims of this country was like an uncut diamond in the hands of T.B. Jaya. The polishing of the diamond was done by none other than late A.M.A. Aziz. T.B. Jaya once again is the first Muslim educationist who had the courage to define the purpose and the objective of the special need for an exclusive institutional arrangement for the Muslim students to receive their education. He wanted learning, all types of learning, to be within the framework of Islam. He believed that knowledge without Islam is not part of Islam. Knowledge for the sake of knowledge is not Islamic. Knowledge for the sake of Allah and His Rasul is the Islamic learning that we are talking about. I think Dr. Shahabdin referred to the Surah Iqra, the very first surah that was revealed. Read in the name of Allah. Not only reading, everything to a Muslim should be in the name of Allah. His 24 hours activity of his daily life, every one of them has to be in the name of Allah. This is what T.B. Jaya stood for. This was his vision. Is this what he stood for? Or is it something different? Is a question that the audience has to answer. This answer one cannot find unless we know the life of T.B. Jaya and his contribution in the education of the Muslims of this country. Mr. Chairman, as I told you, I do not agree with this term, Muslim education. At the same time, I firmly believe that people like Siddi Labbe, T.B. Jaya, and Amy Aziz, the pioneers of education among the Muslim community, they worked for something new. They had a different objective. Their objective was not to produce, not to send merely Muslim students to the medical faculty, the law faculty, the engineering faculty alone. Something more than that. It is that something which brings Islam to education. I always ask the question, what is the difference between a student who enters the medical faculty from Ananda College and a student who enters the medical faculty from Zaira College? They are studying this, if they are studying the same thing, they study the same syllabus, the same curriculum in the medical faculty, then in what way the Muslim doctor will be different from the non-Muslim doctor? In what way the Muslim lawyer or the law graduate will be different from the non-Muslim law graduate? It is not the name that makes the distinction. It is the philosophy that has been built in into the personality of a student in a Muslim environment. Can the Muslim schools give that environment? This is the question that we have to ask today. Mr. Chairman, today, what is the distinction between a Muslim school and a non-Muslim school? Except that Muslim teachers are teaching Muslim students. And except for the names that they are bearing, Al-Marjan, Umar-e-Farooq, Khadija, Aisha Vidyalaya, Badiuddin Vidyalaya, what is the difference between Kandy Girls High School and the Kandy Badiuddin Baliga Vidyalaya? In what way the syllabuses are different? What is that these Muslim schools are doing today that the non-Muslim schools are doing, except early morning as the school starts, before the classes begin, they read a few surahs of the Holy Quran, recite salawat, and some schools you find prayer rooms, mosque. At the end of the school, you recite salawat and disperse. Other than that, in what way the Muslim schools are different from the non-Muslim schools? In what way the product of a Muslim school different from the product of a non-Muslim school? There could be very pious Muslim students from good Islamic background, family background, entering Ananda College, What is the distinction between the product of a Muslim product of Ananda College and a Muslim product of Zahira College? These were some of the questions, not that I am asking, these were the questions that T.B. Jaya himself asked. Preservation of the Islamic faith, protection and fostering of the Islamic values, the value system, conversion of the English education for the betterment of the Muslim community and Islam. Conversion of the English education, so that through the English education, we should be able to produce Muslim warriors, Muslim revolutionaries, Muslim philosophers, Muslim thinkers, Muslim writers. This is what he wanted, which he called as Islamization of knowledge. That was the greatest challenge he had. Islamization of the knowledge. Mr. Chairman, we have another problem. We always confuse between the terms knowledge and education. It is used almost as equal, as synonyms. I think knowledge is not learning. Knowledge is different from education. Education is only a science, I believe, a science of teaching. Education is only a science of teaching. We do not in this country have a special science of teaching for the Muslim community. We are not talking about that science. What we are worried is about the Islamic learning, the knowledge, the wisdom, the intelligence. These are different concepts. The concept of intelligence is different from the concept of knowledge, and the concept of knowledge is different from the concept of learning, and all these things put together becomes wisdom, hikmah, in the language of the Holy Quran. So we must have institutional structures which will divert, which will make use of all these aspects of education into a divinely pool. Are we making an effort to achieve this?